Hey guys, we are so excited to be back here at the RSL show, but before we kick off this episode, we have a statement from newcomer, new signing, Fidel Barajas. It looks like it's a text message about 9 paragraphs long, so keep it here. You're going to hear that towards the end of the episode. I'm so excited to share it with you guys. Let's get this show started. Thanks for being here. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to a long-awaited RSL show with the full staff team. We've got myself, Andy Munoz. We've got Joshua Clark and Alex Napolis. We're here to talk about some of the news and some of the no news. So we got plenty of good stuff coming about in this episode. But first off, let's just do a quick catch-up. I want to know what you guys got for Christmas and what you guys did for New Year. Josh, take it off, bro. Go ahead.
For Christmas, I got some Legos. Super into that. Got a nice little Utes helmet. Super into that. And then for New Year's, I went to the Jazz game and then came home and went to bed like a true mid-30s-year-old man would do.
Amazing. What about you, Alex? What did Santa Claus bring you? I know you get the Hispanic version of Santa Claus like I do. So Santa Claus, what did he bring you, bro?
Santa brought me a couple of vinyl records and some hoodies. So pretty successful Christmas. And then for New Year's, just had a couple of friends come over, hang out, you know, stuff like that, and hung out.
Okay.
Hung out for New Year's. And then
and stuff like that. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, just hung out.
Is this what parents feel like when they talk to their kids, bro?
How was your day? Good.
That's cool, I did pick up a cold like right after, and I've been like dying in bed for like the last week.
Yeah.
So we're not off to a good 2024 start.
Dang. Yeah, everyone's been sick, man. There's been something going around. There's one really disgusting person out there that just got everybody in the valley sick. And yeah, I got sick too, man, over the new year. And Christmas was pretty dope. I don't think I could do it. This is the first Christmas. No, actually, I did get some gifts. Yeah, I got some gifts. Some small gifts. But yeah, New Year was just like any other night, bro. I was in bed so happy by 9:30. No FOMO. Just laying in bed, dude, hanging out. It's a good time. All right. So, hey, listeners, let us know how your Thanksgiving. Let us know how your Christmas and your New Year was. And let us know what Santa Claus brought you. I know we're super late, but we're only 10 days into the year. And we've been waiting for Santa Claus to bring some long-awaited gifts or signings to Real Salt Lake. And I guess we deserve some coal this year because there hasn't been many rumblings, nothing to really be celebrated. So I just kind of want your guys' thoughts individually at the no news, the lack of news, or the underwhelming news. Alex, let's start it off, dude. What are some things that you wish would have happened by now, and are you concerned that we are this late and with no significant news?
No, I'm not concerned, mostly because there's still plenty of time before the window closes. This is the window that goes until April. Obviously, we want signings before the season starts, but there's still plenty of time to make a splash. Although I don't think Real Salt Lake will really be making a splash this window. I don't know if amused is the right word, but I'm more so amused and shocked at the news of what's going out per se.
What's been the biggest shock so far? I think we know what it is. It was kind of long awaited and expected, but what was the biggest shock for you?
I mean, it has to be Demir Krylak. Demir Krylak no longer with the club, ends up signing with Vancouver, which I wish he would have stayed, but it was kind of written on the wall, right?
I'm curious, though, what Vancouver's number is. That's going to be the interesting, you know, piece of information to come out later on when the salaries come out.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's be completely honest. If Vancouver's paying him DP money to play on turf with back issues and knees, you know, getting old, what is Vancouver doing, right? But at the same time, if they're not paying him very much at all and he's still not here, right, maybe we could have gotten him for $200K. Like, I don't think that's anywhere near what he's making. You know, I think that's way too little, but you know what I'm getting at here.
Yeah.
If we find out Vancouver's not paying him a lot and it's not a cap hit, then it's going to be curious, right? Because you want to keep those guys around.
He's the type of guy that you want to have in the locker room, and obviously as the captain last year and over the course of the last couple of years, he's been just a good vibe to have in the locker room, and he's been so instrumental to what Rouselake have done and what, you know, and he's done some good things in the community, and so it kind of sucks not being able to keep him here. But I understand that he, you know, wants to continue playing. He wants to continue having some kind of a big role with the team, and so if Vancouver's, you know, offering that, might as well take it.
Right, and at least it's not, you know, Kansas City or Colorado.
That's true.
And I get a look forward.
It sucks that he's with Vancouver, but I'm happy that he's with Vancouver because...
Yeah, but like, I'll be happy to buy a Vancouver jersey. Like, I'm going to get a Vancouver Krylak jersey, you know?
There you go, yeah.
So it's a good reason.
That's right. Was it Vancouver that was sharing our stadium for a while, or do I have that?
Yeah.
It was, right? Yeah. And they planted like the nice tree out front. what kind of tree was it? Was it a maple tree?
Canadian bacon tree.
It was something. Yeah, it was something.
Like a Canadian red maple.
Yeah.
Grand Farms, let us know.
It's a real story. There's a tree planted that they offered as like a thank you for letting us, for letting them use our field during the peak of COVID, right? I believe that's what it was.
Yep.
So there's a tree. I don't know. You know, I think it's out there. It's right outside, just right across the main entrance to the Lions Club over on the west side. So swing by, go take a look at it. We should do a little Krylak shrine around it. That'd be pretty funny.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
So, you know, I talked about that a little bit in the solo episode, and I kind of reiterated the same thing that you said, Alex, about, you know, would we love to see him retire here, fly his, you know, jersey and do the proper goodbye last match at home, which is, I know, something Josh would like to see. But as we... You know, as we kind of near the tail end of his career and we have to start focusing on what's ahead, you know, at the end of the day, you got to make a business decision. And I think that's all it was, right? It was still like an amicable departure. He had a great message. The club had a great message. Far better off ascending than Albert Rusnak, if you guys remember that. So
yeah, he'll be getting cheered when he comes back. I don't think anyone's going to boo Dami.
No, and if you do, Josh has a nice little knuckle sandwich lefter for you, the lefty. So yeah, man, we'll say goodbye to him, and we tried. You know, we're gonna try to set up at least a conversation, but I know things can be a little bit rough, especially when the season starts, and especially with Krylak being on a different team, we may not get that interview. Who knows? Cool. Let's move along. More news. Today, a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot of news dropped, but we're going to be seeing Jasper Lofelsent, playing in our quote-unquote rival club. You guys are both nodding your head no or shaking your head no. Jasper, going to Colorado. As we know, Colorado's been making some pretty, you can say big moves. They're making some noise, but
huge.
They're going to be getting Lofelsent. So, who wants to talk about Colorado, the moves they've made, and what you think Jasper's role is going to be there?
I think Jasper's going to be a bench player there.
I mean, but he'll probably have more time than he would here.
Yeah, he'll definitely see the field. Whereas I don't know that he would have seen barely any playing time. I'm honestly surprised we didn't move him the prior window.
It sucks because, you know, whenever Jasper's on the, whenever Lofelsen was on the field, he had a different gear and he would kick it into that different gear. And he has an engine that just wouldn't quit. He would run, and he'd be in places where you needed him to be. So it's unfortunate to see him go, but at the same time, it's a move that 100% makes sense. Not, as far as like clearing cap space, clearing international roster spot. Because if you look at that midfield, you get Pablo Ruiz, who is probably the most important player in that midfield. Brian Ojeda, who's been fantastic as the U22 initiative. Palacio, who's also fantastic as the U22 initiative. And then you got Moises Niemann coming back. You got Emeka Nelly, who's most likely going to be filling into that center of the midfield spot.
And you have Lambert.
And you have Kevin Lambert, who can also play there as well. So it's a very crowded middle of the park. Joining, though, with Loffelson over at Colorado is Georgi Mihaljevic, the U.S. youth national star, or I guess fringe player maybe, I don't know at this point. But he was fantastic with Montreal. He was one of the big reasons why Montreal had such a great season under Wilfred Nancy 2 years ago. He hasn't really picked it up that well in the Netherlands. And so I think if Mihaljevic comes back to Colorado and plays anywhere near what he was doing with Montreal, I think that Colorado attack has a phenomenal piece in Mihaljevic.
Now, not only have they picked up two midfielders, but they also picked up goalkeeper Zach Steffen. Now, a controversial take probably, but I think this is just like a Tim Howard 2.0 for Colorado. He's fine. He's fine.
Possibly.
I don't think he's going to have the Berkey effect. You know what I mean?
No, 100%. And I think that's mostly because of, you know, how much injuries Steffen has dealt with while he's been overseas. He's definitely not going to be the goalkeeper that left here. I don't remember what year, but when he left with Columbus, he's definitely not that guy anymore. But I really like Steffen, so I hope he comes back and has a really good season with Colorado. But it's definitely not going to be, you know, the level of maybe a Hugo Lloris going to LAFC or Roman Berkey going to St. Louis.
And then they picked up another attacker in Omer Fernandez from the New York Red Bulls.
I mean, on paper, that Colorado team's looking dangerous. On paper, that Colorado team's looking reloaded and looking a lot better, but I think it'll really come down to what Chris Armas decides how to utilize that new attacking firepower that he's gotten, because he's been criticized in the past for not being the best attacking coach.
Sure. And then, you know, let's just remember it is Colorado. Yeah. We hate them, and we hope they have no success. So, you know, I'm glad they're quote-unquote rebuilding, but I'm not necessarily afraid of Colorado. I think they're just going to be more annoying. And I think what RSL's roster stands at is still better than the Colorado roster in a lot of ways. And I think, you know, a couple signings here or there will really keep us ahead of them. But that's what I'm afraid of. You know, we got to keep up with Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Colorado, you know, 2023 just dead last, at least in the Western Conference. I don't know exactly how they stack up in the East. It looks like they might be tied with a few just points wise, but I think that's kind of what, you know, it's always in the season. We always see it in the season. We pair up against a team that we should beat, and then we have difficulty against. I'm already kind of seeing, or at least maybe predicting, we know some of my predictions come true, at least. It's always those teams that you don't see as a threat or a problem, like you just said, Josh, are the ones that exactly come in and get the win on the road or the draw on the road or something like that. And so it still does come down to chemistry. And I think that's one thing that Colorado's just going to have to figure out, especially with these bigger signings. You can sign some talent like they have right now, but like you said, it's you're going to have to wait to see that product. And I do agree with you in the front that Real Salt Lake, although the movement has been a little bit underwhelming, at least we know that we're somewhat meshing well. And even with the moving pieces like Demir, we've seen a lot of role players kind of step in and basically replace what we had in Demir earlier in the season. So I still do think that we fare well and we actually sit a little bit better right now than where the Rapids are, even with these big names.
Well, and honestly, I think the rumored signing that's kind of come out today is almost a bigger deal than some of the signings Colorado's making.
Huge.
In my opinion.
Huge deal.
Cool. So let's talk about that. Let's go ahead and cover that next. Do we like it? Are we concerned? What are our feelings overall?
Fidel Barajas, USL 17-year-old, Mexican international, by the way. He looks like such an electric player. I've been watching his highlights throughout the course of the last few hours, and he looks phenomenal for a 17-year-old. And I really like the gamble that Real Salt Lake is taking, going back into the USL pool and pulling this youngster who has a lot of promise and a lot of potential from the USL, because we've already seen it be successful once in Diego Luna. And so I think that the front office and the scouting department have also had their eyes on this guy for a little bit, and he's going to come into Real Salt Lake and hopefully replicate a little bit of what Diego Luna has done.
And you know, I know a lot of people, you know, homegrown signings are a little rough, and signing the best players out of the USL, like Luna, Lambert, you know, we've gone there before. It might not be the most exciting and big name and splashy, but these are the guys we need to sign to turn around and flip them for multi-millions of dollars, right? After they give us some success, they're young guys that they're ready to get their professional minutes. And, you know, we want to be the club that gets them out there. So I love that we're really heavily scouting the USL. I'm surprised more teams don't, honestly. But it's a good, exciting move. Now, am I okay with those being the only types of moves you make? No, like, we still want to see some veterans come in, you know, big flashy signings, but this is a really positive signing, and I'm very pumped.
Yeah, it's super positive, and I think it also speaks a lot to the fact that there was an offer from PSV on the table for this guy, and he just decided not to take it, and Charleston Battery decided not to take it, and instead take Real Salt Lake's offer to bring him here, which I think is also huge. If he's already attracting this kind of interest from a team like PSV in the Netherlands at 17, I think it's huge. This kid has a lot of potential. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a testament too to how much the league has grown, where if PSV were to come with an offer not even 3 years ago, it's a no-brainer. You're taking that, right? Yeah. So to stick around in a league where the funds are increasing, you got Apple deals, you've got names like Messi and Suarez linking up in Miami. You know, there's still plenty of growth that the league has to endure, but we're seeing a lot of the appeal finally kind of trickling down, especially to the younger kids who are just now at this point considering to reject offers from overseas and play here, which is actually pretty incredible. This dude is arguably in his prime, or hasn't even really reached his prime. Super young kid, but just looking at his stats from the USL with the Charleston Battery, managed to get 5 goals, 11 assists in 32 games just last season, which is phenomenal, I think, especially in a league like that. The other point that I wanted to make too, you guys are saying, hey, yeah, these are good signings. These are, in a way, it's different from what we've seen in the past, but we have a proven track record of what a signing like this can do. We saw it in Diego Luna. Diego Luna instantly came in, made an impact. We awaited to really see him kind of hit the field, but once he did, automatically, just off the turn, just creating chances, opportunities, assists, some awesome goals, some phenomenal moments, probably the majority of any good highlights that we had last season. So I'm with you guys on this one, and especially with the resume that Fidel Barajas has, this could just be excellent, man. This might be, it's like that dark horse signing, right? We're all waiting for this amazing signing to happen, and a veteran player, someone who's established, and we might be singing this dude's praises in September, probably. Who knows?
I really do hope so. I really do. All right, with the exception of, obviously, we have ourselves a left wing here. Then we have Bonilla and Silva, both outside backs, coming in earlier this transfer window. Where do you think the need is on this roster? I have my ideas, but I want to hear what your guys' take is.
I think there's still a little bit of a news that we've yet to touch, just because it's not official. But there is a very big potential that Jefferson Savarino and Rubio Rubin are no longer coming back to the club next season. So I think right now, just kind of looking at, you know, taking those two off the table and looking at the roster at the moment, I think we need a little bit more firepower in the attack. And I would also love to see a little bit more in the center back position. And I think those two are where I'm looking at right now.
When you say in the attack, are you saying it like a 10 or someone backing up Chicho? Someone reliable backing up Chicho.
A little bit of both. Okay. A little bit of both. It honestly could go either way, mostly because I still think Julio is a really good option coming off the bench. And then if you have a true number 10, a beautiful playmaker playing underneath Chicho Arango and Ernesto Julio, that could be another huge difference maker.
Okay. What are your thoughts, Andy?
I'd agree, man. Just more so support for Chicho Arango. He's getting hot last season, contributing. Then as soon as the injuries kind of plagued us, I feel like that was kind of a missing piece. But in Jefferson Savarino, it was the same thing that we've just kind of been pushing. Lack of, I wouldn't say effort, but just kind of lack of, I wouldn't even say confidence. It's more like lack of desire. I don't even know how to describe it at this point. So I would say if we were to lose Savarino to an external club or whatever, some kind of move, I would just hope that whoever his replacement is can just bring in more of a presence that would exude, confidence. I mean, dude, you see it when Chicho steps on the field. There's a whole shift in mentality. That's the word I'm looking for. I would just look for mental toughness. So for me, it's not even someone that could come in. And I mean, ideally, you want someone who can create service, more opportunities, crush goals, give us some highlights. But for me, it's a piece that I guess would have to replace Krylock, more of a mentality, mental toughness, because that's we know that's a factor in successful clubs. You got to have that presence. And right now, looking at the roster, Chicho Arango gives me that kind of confidence, that mental toughness up front. I'm really just trying to pinpoint this down. I love Rubio Rubin. Like I love him as a person, but that was also somebody who just kind of fizzled out for us. And Pablo Ruiz, obviously, I think he is a presence to be felt when he is on the field, but obviously he was injury ridden, so we didn't really get to see him at the tail end. So for me, yeah, it's just those pieces up front and then bring in somebody who can make this team tough mentally.
That's a weird ask out of like a 10, but I'll take it.
Hey, dude, you asked, man.
I appreciate your, I love your answer, right? Like, we definitely need, the Kyle presence, the Everton presence, the Demir presence, those types to really, take the alpha of the game, take that spot. So,
but who knows? I mean, we already have, clearly we're getting Jason Christ back.
Right. And we have Brian Vera, who he can handle the field, right? He can handle that kind of thing. So,
I'm curious just to see what will happen in this club operations / special projects title. That is kind of silly. I wonder how much exposure he'll have maybe with Pablo. I mean, you got to imagine there's going to be a lot of exposure there. So I'm just curious, dude, how we're going to see maybe this shift in mentality. I mean, for a long time, like we said this on episodes before, it's like a moot point. We've said it so much. Our club slogan, our motto, team is the star, right? All of that just kind of dissolved and disappeared, and this team lost its identity. So to get Jason Christ back, kind of at the helm, kind of behind the scenes, like the bad dude in Star Wars, what's
Palpatine? Emperor Palpatine,
yeah. Yeah, like he's in the back kind of, controlling it, makes me very excited. And I think that all of the stuff that we had seen prior, especially with like Moose not playing and doing these things to negatively affect the club when it came to trying to pull more money through a new contract negotiation, I think a lot of that, I think it's going to go away with Jason Christ coming back. I think he's going to bring back that respect that we've been lacking.
Yeah, I think some people are going to be a little scarier of Jason than they were of, I don't know, Kurt or Elliot. Yeah. He's very intense, but I'm, happy to have him back. So, not in a coaching role.
There's a lot to be expected. We're probably going to get some news here in the next week. it sounded like, per our sources. So stay tuned. I probably would. I don't know. They always say that, though. They say to wait a week and then, you know, they drop it first thing in the morning right after they tell us that. But hopefully we start to see some big moves, something that'll get us excited. Because one thing that I don't really love is when the season has started and then we get a new signing. It's almost like you're trying to make up for that lost time in the preseason. You're trying to play catch up to have players mesh within the system that we've got going on. We might already be, you know, three results deep without a key player that we would have had, because I believe I don't have the schedule pulled up in front of me, but dang, dude, does the season resume in February?
February 21st, wow. Against Inter Miami.
That's right. So we get our start off away, and then I believe in March we've got three games. And I want to say, is it two home games or are they all home games? Let's pull up the schedule real quick. So February, away to Miami, which is going to be insane. We wish we could go. I would not be shocked if KSL sends some people to that match, but it's not going to be us. What are the matches in March and how many of those are home?
In the month of March, it looks like we have three home games. We open up the season, or we open up the home opener with LAFC on March 2nd, and then Colorado comes and visits us on March 9th, and then on Saturday, March 30th, St. Louis comes and visits.
St. Louis, very
That's
cool.
That's a brutal early schedule.
Yeah, so right off the get-go, I mean, it's to the point that I just made where, you know, if we do wait a little bit longer to get some key players in the roster or some signings, we might already be three, four matches in deep. Probably matches that we may have lost anyway, but dude, Miami, LAFC, who's the
St.
one after
Louis.
That? Yeah, I forgot St. Louis, but who was the one between LAFC and St. Louis? Colorado? Oh, Colorado. Hopefully.
Yeah, dangerous Colorado team, yeah.
Well, and then there's also a trip to St. Louis and a trip to Vancouver in between all that too.
Yeah. So it's a heavy, heavy soccer schedule just right off the bat, right off the get-go in about 5 to 6 weeks?
I'm not ready, man. The set break was so nice. I can't imagine how they're feeling.
I know. I was going to say, man, if we're not ready as fans or podcasters, media, whatever you guys want to call us, professional crap talkers, if we're not ready, imagine what the club is feeling right now.
The schedule this year is brutal.
And, you know, there's like, it's easy for us to like get real ornery about player movement, coaches getting hired, whatnot. But like, we have to remember offseason's like a month and a half, yeah. You know? So you got to, you know, cut a little slack there, because that turnaround is insane. That's just insane.
Is this schedule, is it this way in the beginning? Are they trying to cram matches? Is there another tournament that's going to be happening in between?
Open Cup, Leagues Cup.
So they're doing Leagues Cup again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically all of July again will be.
Wow, dude. So, okay. See, this will tell you how
that's
off I've been from everything. Like, the Leagues Cup, I thought for sure that was going to be like a bi-yearly type thing, but they're just rolling with it every single year.
Yes, sir.
Man, who's, like, lining up their pockets on the expense of the freaking
Don
himself, dude.
Which is why Don Garber came out and said that MLS was not going to participate in the Open Cup, was because of, you know, the congestion and taking that month off. So you have to cram as much games as you can before July, and then you have to cram as much as you can afterwards. And so, yeah, shout out Don Garber.
I love that U.S. soccer just turned around and went, cute try.
Wow. That's, you know, for me, that's just too much soccer. Although Leagues Cup was kind of fun, but that was hell. I worked the last Leagues Cup, and it just seemed like there were matches every single day. And, of course, because it's elimination, it was, let's face it, it was kind of fun. But at some point, there can be too much soccer. I would argue that there's too much soccer going on, bro.
100%. It can get a little hectic.
Especially when it affects your club. But I can't even remember. I'm trying to recall how we did in Leagues Cup. We had a pretty early exit, no?
Round of 16 loss to LAFC.
That was it's when Ruiz got hurt.
That Ruiz got hurt.
Right. And I think at just at the same time where that at the ending of that, or just right prior, we were like, it was kind of intermixing with the Open Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah. Basically, the next game was Houston and we lost that.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember it now. I remember clearly. We were trying to think, you know, how could we go into Leagues Cup play, still be a threat, come back, do US Open Cup, and possibly host Miami. And then we just got, you know, basically eliminated.
Don't forget the Raccoon game. That was one of them.
That's true. So much fun. Oh, man. All of that feels like it was 5 years ago. It's crazy.
I know.
I think a lot of people were freaking out about signings early, you know, a couple weeks ago or whatever, or around the holidays. But I was more so concerned that we were, what, 2 weeks away from preseason and we had no coaching staff.
That was my bigger concern as well. That's actually a very large stressor.
Well, 100%. And we talked about it in the group chat, and then I wanted to tweet some stuff, but I decided to hold back. But luckily, finally, Real Salt Lake, it's not official yet, but there are people who have joined my Pablo Mastroianni's coaching staff.
Is one of them internal, Alex?
One of them is internal, and I think it's fantastic because he's one of my favorite people in Hamas and Olave.
I'm actually pretty pumped on that as well.
Yeah.
It's cool to see him because it's not like he just barely retired and then just barely coached the academy, right? Like, he's genuinely worked his way up, been the boss of the Monarchs for 5 years.
Somewhat like that. And he took him to the promised land, USL championship back in, what was it, 19?
Yep.
Has a championship under his belt. And so I think, like you said, he's a guy who's kind of worked his way up, been in some situations where he's had to step into that role, because I think when he won that championship, he was interim head coach. And he's just kind of ran with his opportunity. And while maybe the Monarchs haven't been the best team, I still think he's been a very important piece to player development. And so it's going to be really awesome to start to see that translate over to the development of guys like Andres Gomez, guys like Nelson Palacio, guys like the kid we just signed from Charleston Battery. I already forgot his name.
Barajas.
Fidel.
Exactly.
Barajas.
It's a good hire. It's a good hire. I like it.
And I hope he kind of brings back some of that, you know, hard-nosed Olave the Verb mentality to our center backs, to our defense.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that'll be fun to bring that chant back. Olave says now we have every
Olave says no
to do it now. But you know, you mentioned the Monarchs kind of, you know, fizzling out or not doing well, but that was super questionable, man. Remember that, Josh? They won 2019 USL Championship. They retained a few players, but a lot of them were either, I can't remember if they were promoted or like traded off, and at some point it almost became like a development team. There were a lot of young signings, and it was enough young signings to almost become a meme, because that whole roster felt like it was like 15, 16, and 17 year olds that had never played pro, that weren't meshing well, and then it led to veteran players being traded off or being sent off to different clubs.
Yeah, and I think that's the MLS Next effect, right? I think they probably knew it was coming. You're not really going to be paying USL guys to play in a development league. It really is just a true farm team at this point of guys looking to make their big breaks, some potentially doing some recoveries, right? But, yeah, it's
rough. Like, let's just say what it was, because leading up to the 2019 run, USL obviously was super competitive. They were tough teams. It was fun football to watch. And so the Monarchs getting that trophy when they did, I'm not saying you guys said it was discounted, but it was a big deal. It was a big deal for them to win that trophy in 2019. And so that does say a lot about Hamas and Olave, and I'm the same way. I'm stoked. Hopefully there's something that he could bring from that team's mentality over to the first team. It's going to be awesome.
And then per Tom Bogart's reports, the other two names that are going to be added to that coaching The coaching staff for Pablo. The other assistant is going to be Anthony Pulis from Inter Miami, formerly Inter Miami, and from the Miami FC. And then Nate Miller, who I believe came from San Diego Loyal. There is one more internal hire where Mirza Hayrambasic, who's been with the club forever, he's been with the Monarchs forever. Per Tom Berger's report, he will be the goalkeeping coach moving forward.
Fantastic. Hey, do you remember, Josh, when we had our indoor soccer team and who came and played? They were the goalkeeper coach, I think, for the Monarchs, weren't they?
Yeah, he's currently the head coach of the Forward Madison. I can't think of his name. Let me look it up.
Dude, we had some sick connects, dude. We used to have an indoor team, and we had Andy Williams come and sub and play with us. Remember that, Josh?
Yep. Sebastian Velasquez came once.
Yep. Dude, it was insane. I would just get frustrated with Andy Williams because I would tell him to shoot it, and he would not take a shot, dude.
He'd be like, I don't want to kill someone.
Literally. And he could have. He could have.
Matt Glazer.
Matt Blazer?
Glazer.
Blazer. Yep. Bro, he came in and our indoor team had no defense because we were all just trying to score goals, but nobody could score on that guy. He was just so good. But he was pretty frustrated, you could kind of tell.
I mean, I can't blame him. I remember one year Josh Saunders came and watched for some reason. I don't remember why. But my God, dude, it was like, there's a pro here. So bro here watching us play soccer, guys. It was so ridiculous.
Do you guys remember when David Ochoa got busted?
Yeah, dude.
That's so funny, man. Oh, man. The downfall of David Ochoa.
Somebody needs to write a book on that.
Something. That's wild, bro. But that just goes to show, man. You gotta live in the moment, be in the moment, have your head straight on, because in a flash, you could be coaching youth. When you're 23,
that was less than a year, yeah. Like of a full downfall.
You can only hope that you'll get a second chance at some point. Let's do some Twitter questions, Alex. If you have those pulled up, go ahead and read them off, and let's talk to the listeners. Let's see what you guys have to say.
Again, everybody, thank you for participating. Thank you for shooting us over some questions. We'll start with Keenan. We'll start with Keenan. And what are your thoughts about the Olave promotion? Love him with the Monarchs. But the Monarchs have been awful the last year or so. Obviously, very different situation, but it seems like classic internal hire, the RSL way.
Yeah, we covered it a little bit, but I was never too worried about the Monarchs record. I think that was almost by design in a lot of ways, right? When you're constantly rotating your 11, playing 15, 16 year olds until they gel, it's not going to happen. And there's a lot of players to run through. So, you know, that is a development team now. So I'm not concerned about his coaching record at all.
The, as for the RSL way part on that, I know we get frustrated by the like internal hires or the internal pushes, to different types of positions. But I think in this instance, it is the right one to make, or, you know, you have a standout guy, somebody who is deep embedded into Real Salt Lake, the culture. He's been around the coaching staff. You know, there's conversations between the Monarchs and Real Salt Lake, especially when they're doing a lot of development. So in this instance, I think, yeah, he's just been called up to the next step of what he's been working with. And so hopefully he's just in the right state of mind, you know, the right, just in the right headspace to be an assistant coach and take what he's learned and what he's proven and apply it here with RSL.
At UtahMan22 says, why does RSL seem to always wait until the summer to sign players? I know we signed the 17-year-old, but it feels like we need to sign another 1 to 2 impact players for us to be a competitive squad this season.
Yeah, so I think typically the winter transfer window is a little more expensive. Worldwide, a lot of teams won't do their big business in the winter window, right? It's usually a window used to kind of do some stop gaps, fill some holes, but the big signings happen in the summer. The other teams around the league might be making more moves, right? But those teams are absolutely abysmal outside of, you know, the Luis Suarez's and stuff, but we're not going to get those moves. So not seeing a big splash in January is not concerning.
Yeah, and I think that just goes to coincide too with like the European windows and you know, everybody else's international windows. Is all the big teams and every like are making the moves in the summer, and so our MLS kind of has to coincide with that as much as they can. And I think that's why a lot of these bigger moves are in the summer.
And that's typically when players run out of contract as well.
Yeah. At Idzerk, opinions mainly on the departures more than the signings. Think Krylak Corner will be staying, like Beckerman's block. Also, the new staff signing for Pablo's coaching staff. Oh, we need stadium improvements, not art and other stuff. Seats seem to be out of date. Long time no see.
I would say I'm not too concerned about stadium upgrades. We got that awesome, long-awaited standing section that I love to go watch games in. The PA system has kind of been upgraded, too. They're doing a lot more to get the fan involvement, I think. Also, you know, working in a little bit of, like, the Hispanic heritage. That's been really cool to see. So unless they're planning on building, I don't know, like a collapsible roof and give the whole thing a facelift, I'm not too concerned. I think they've done enough to kind of keep us happy. But now I think myself and a lot of fans, we've kind of shifted to, okay, give us a better product on field. I would much rather go see a team that's winning home games than, no offense, I love the murals and all that, but I would rather much have a better time because of better results in the stadium. But that's just me.
I will say the Krylak Corner is a good question. Just because I thought that was huge, not only to obviously help underprivileged families get to games, but also because I just thought that it did a lot for bringing kids in to see Real Salt Lake and to kind of have that opportunity to follow the team and fall in love with the team. So I really do hope that there's another player on the squad at the moment that decides to pick up the Krylak Corner and decides to continue to keep doing that. Cause I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah. If it's not continued on by Krylak, I think the club's got a great opportunity to do right by the community, keep it around. Because yeah, you want to, what better way to build connections than to bring in, you know, underprivileged or just any kids for that matter, bring them in and have them enjoy Real Salt Lake. That's your future, right? Future fans, future generations, future players, future everything. So, yeah, I would hope that they would keep it in some instance.
At Travis Anderson 9 says, is the lack of GM a big reason why we aren't looking to replace the players that have left? Do you foresee any potential signings before the window closes, or will have to wait until the summer?
We've already got 3 signings, right? 2 of them are homegrown, sure, draft picks, but Fidel's a bigger deal than it's leading on.
Fidel's a huge deal, and there's still obviously plenty of time before the window closes to continue to make signings. I do think that people and players will come in to replace the players that have left, and I don't think it has anything to do with the lack of GM. I think there's guys like Kurt Schmidt, guys like Jason Kreis, who have really taken on some of these decision-making important roles and are running with it. So we'll see what they have up their sleeves. At Daniel Bradford, with the current roster, which position group do you think is the weakest?
Striker.
I'm leaning on defense.
Center back? I mean, even our outside backs are questionable. Let's be real.
My struggle with the defense is that we're running back the exact same line that we had last season, who I think at times really struggled.
You think?
That's my concern with the defense at the moment.
You know, as long as Justin Glad can step back up to what we expect of Justin Glad.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping a Lambert kind of takes over for Marcelo so we can get Vera back on the left. And then I think we're totally fine, right? But if we're relying on Anelli still on the back line, right, I see him more as a midfielder going forward. Mm-hmm. But I'm still totally okay seeing him play outside back. But if we're seeing a lot of Anelli instead of Oviedo or Glad-Vera partnerships in the middle, that's where we'll get a little concerned, I think.
I think that the top two center backs are Vera and Glad. And like you said, I would love to see Vera kind of move out to the fullback position, because that is, you know, what he likes to play and what he's played most of his career, what he played in Colombia. And I think he can be really, really good there for us. And I think that would also give you the opportunity to bring in another center back to really boost that defensive line. Andy Wolf says, what draft picks are likely to join the team? What about the ones from last year? What loanees are expected to be back from camp? Are we sure Mufsaski isn't coming back? What are they doing with that, with the freed cap space from Damir Rabin and Sava? Draft picks.
Mufsaski's not coming back.
that bridge has been burned. The draft picks are going to be obviously Bonilla and Silva, who have already been signed. I do think Matthew Bell is another interesting prospect that I think eventually ends up on the first team. But Loney's coming back. Elijah Paul is actually already coming back. His loan to Larn is done. And then Orozco is staying overseas. And I think that's it. One more. Footballer A-Lo, what are good transfer options for RSL this offseason? I think we need to pick up a CM, CDM, and a goal poaching striker to come off the bench.
I'll take a center back and another Mufsaski, right? Less attitude Mufsaski. Be down with that.
I don't know what he means by solid CM / CDM, because again, I think that's the most stacked position we have.
As long as he's pointing out the defense, I think that's the common thread there. Okay. Newsflash. We just got a text message, Josh.
I was trying to read it real fast.
I am going to read it so that we can get some reactions here. These are direct quotes from Fidel Barajas. Here is his statement on joining Real Salt Lake. So we're going to read these real quick. So it's really long, but it seems like it's really heartfelt. So, also, I'm still a little sick, so if I sound nasally, I apologize. All right, Barajas says, I'm really excited, especially going from USL to MLS and picking an amazing club like Real Salt Lake. I'm just really excited. I look at players like Diego Luna and the history of the club, how they bring in young talents and produce them to get a lot of minutes in the first game and possibly go to Europe. I feel like that was the direction I wanted to go and the pathway I wanted to take. It's why I thought RSL was the perfect opportunity. I've been following Diego since before the U20 World Cup. After the U20 World Cup, his name just became bigger and bigger. I followed him since he was with El Paso Locomotives, and I guess he just gave me more motivation. You can say he's like an idol, showing how he's taken that pathway, and now he's at RSL, and so am I. It's perfect. I feel like it just gives me more motivation to be like him and end up in Europe. I was just looking at other players that have gone the USL route. I talked to my parents about how I was wanting to get first team minutes and play at a high level, and I thought USL was perfect, especially if I wanted to go to Europe. I feel like it's faster, and you see a lot of players take the academy pathway, and there I felt like I was just another player. Thank God I was given the opportunity to go to Charleston, and from there, now I'm going to MLS and it's all worked out. Just looking at players, for example, Diego Luna and other players that I've seen take that pathway and it works for them to go to Europe. And that's where I want to end up. In my first season in MLS, I'd love to start getting minutes and just seeing the style of play and how fast the style of play is. Just getting used to all that. Just like how it was getting used to the style of play and speed in USL. I'd love to get used to the league, get used to players and my teammates, and we'll see how I go from there. I think that it's just another, you could say, bonus for me having a player like Diego show me around, show me how it is, and give me his thoughts on how he was when he first joined the league. It'll just make it easier for me. Going from an MLS academy to the USL was a huge transition in my soccer life and my personal life. I was able to have amazing people around me, such as coaches and players who helped me fit in quickly. Thanks to that, I've won a good amount of awards this year, and now, thank God, I'm going to what you could say is next level in the MLS. I would say my whole family inspired my love for soccer, mainly my dad, who loves soccer and was able to play when he was my age. I feel like I looked up to him. He's the reason I do this, and I just want to end up just like him. So far with my national team, both U.S. and Mexico, it's been an honor and blessing, something that I think every soccer player dreams of. And not only for me, but for my parents too, being Mexicans. I think it brings them a lot of joy to watch me play for them. Playing in the 2026 World Cup, that's another goal I want to accomplish for either national team. For this year at RSL, I have a good goal set up to win MLS Newcomer of the Year, then just start getting minutes and hopefully make it in the starting 11. Being in the starting 11, that's my biggest goal. Dude, did we just read a freaking direct text from Fidel Barajas? Because that's what that felt like. That was, this looks like it's a text. It doesn't seem like it's a professional statement that has kind of been vetted and then kind of rewritten. This sounds exactly how like a young kid would
read your
text, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I love it.
So yeah, we got a from our source, a really good source. This is Fidel Barajas, I think, just typed up like 9 paragraphs and it has yet to be dissected and kind of cleaned up. So that's straight from Fidel. How do you guys feel about that?
You know, for first impression, I'm loving that Diego Luna just attracted a potential young stud to this club. So we can thank Diego for that. Big ups, dude. And a big opportunity to really, you know, take this kid under his wing as well. So that's really, really cool to me.
Alex, what did that statement do for you, dude?
Fantastic. I loved it. I feel very similar to how I felt when Luna was first announced back in May of 22 or whenever it was. Just super optimistic. Just from looking, hearing that statement and seeing the highlights, I'm very, very excited to see this guy come in.
Yeah, a couple of things that stood out to me was he's coming in with goals, and it's not just, hey, I want to get into the starting 11. Obviously, that's clear. That's everybody's goal. But to put a goal milestone that's pretty attainable and pretty reasonable, I feel like what's the canned answer? Oh, I want to come in and I want to win MLS Cup. Well, you might see that from a veteran player, or if you were to get a big signing like Lucas Zelarayan or Cucho or something like that, right? But here we have a kid with a realistic goal with an opportunity to maybe win MLS Newcomer of the Year. And I actually really like that because that's a milestone that is attainable. It's realistic. And if he were to win an award like that, like we said before, it alludes to increasing his value, making the club better, possibly a better run. But also, we also have to take a step back and realize that as much as we want him to go on the field, it's probably not going to happen, especially with the way that Diego Luna was handled and Pablo's still the coach, right?
Yeah, hey, you know, I realistically, with what I've seen from this kid and what I've heard, would not be shocked to see him in the 11 end of the season.
That's the caveat, end of the season, right? I know a lot of people are going to want to see him sooner, especially when we start to go to training and other people go to training and they're like, man, this kid's shining. He's a good fit, right? So I think we're still going to have to be patient. But also to Alex's point, the influence that Diego has on pulling a signing, dude, that you have to, I mean, it's right here in front of us. That was a big deciding factor. So props to Diego to come into a system, play as well as he did. Did we see him as on the field as soon as we wanted, as fast as we wanted him to? No. But to do it in that little amount of time, to have that influence over a kid who, without a doubt, is probably going to be a like a super national team prospect in the future, it's awesome. So I love this, man. This is a really cool statement.
Yep. All about it. Love the timing. Love the timing. Beautiful.
So with that, we will now conclude the RSL show on KSL Sports. Follow us at RSL show on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Follow at KSL Sports. Tweet at us. Every question that you guys send, we like to get on the show. So be involved. Come hang out with us. And thank you so much for listening to a new episode of the RSL show.